Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, June 3rd. I'm Ray Graff. When was the last time your car had a tune-up? When was the last time you had a tune-up? All right, I withdraw that second question. We'll talk about cars today. Gordon Fricke is back with his automotive repair and maintenance advice. So if you haven't brought the car in, maybe your local shop has been closed with the pandemic, and you have a question, do give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. He knows what he's talking about. It's always a popular show when Gordon is on. So call early, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Cause today on the show after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff on the program to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions today. None other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. This script is several years old, so it may be getting close to 40 years. I'm not even sure. The number to call with your questions is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpopwamc.org. I will earnestly caution you that once this program gets rolling, the lines load up really quickly. Gordon is a popular guest, so call early, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, Ray. How are you?
Everybody healthy?
Everybody's fine. Everybody's fine, and I hope everybody in your neck of the woods is.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. You know, we had an interesting one with my wife's car, and I thought I would bring this up to just so I could rant about how much I hate computerized vehicles. And it's still under warranty, so it didn't cost us anything. But you shifted this car into park sometimes recently, and it says, and then you try to turn the car off with the button, and it said, no, you got to shift it into park first.
Oh.
And I said, I'm in park. And eventually you jiggle the handle on the shifter and it would stop.
Yep.
And brought it into the shop. And they're great service people at this place. I won't say the name of the dealership. And they said, okay, well, we got a bulletin on this. We're going to replace this wiring harness. But it may happen again because we've heard of this a lot. They replaced the wiring harness. By the time the wife got home, it was doing it again.
Oh, boy.
So they had to replace, I believe, the entire shifter mechanism. But it wasn't a problem. Like, the car was in park. This is
a
sensor or a computer thing, which drives me crazy.
Well, you know, depending on the age of the vehicle, most of the automatic transmissions today, the lever that you move and operate, whether it be on the column or on the floor, really does not have any mechanical connection to the transmission anymore.
It's like a fly-by-wire plane.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shift-by-wire.
Yeah.
So sensors and potentiometers have to take your request. That's what it is now. You were requesting park, and you put the lever in park or the whatever you've got for mechanism, and the computer either couldn't carry it out or didn't think it was in park, and that's why you got that message.
No, I don't like it. I like the old.
No, we're more and more disconnected from the vehicles. If you know, there's also automatic braking now on your adaptive cruise controls and your autopilot cars. So you know, you used to think that at least my foot is still pushing on the brakes, you know, when I want it to.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about you last week because I've now hooked on a new show. You know, my kids like the cooking shows, and I found this show on one of the cable channels. It's called Counting Cars.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen that show?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I flipped through a lot of those the channels on those car shows, sure.
It's a really great idea for a show, and it makes you salivate some of these old muscle cars and stuff. All right, a couple of quick emails here, and then we'll get right to the phones. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. This one came in quite a while ago from Paula in Dalton, Mass. Paula says, I have a 2012 Hyundai Limited. Last couple years, experiencing problems with exterior light bulbs going out, even when replaced. Last month, repair shop replaced the right front headlight bulb. Shortly thereafter, the light didn't work. Repair shop indicates possible electrical issue. Sounded like a job would be tricky to identify. Any thoughts?
Yeah. You know, we'll get vehicles with repeat light failures.
Yeah.
And generally, it's not an electrical problem in the vehicle. A lot of times we chalk it up to poorly manufactured replacement parts.
Oh.
And sometimes the origin of the parts is good, and sometimes it's bad, depending on the level of quality and who's overseeing their manufacturing. But I've had a lot of cars come back with repeat bulb failures, and nothing in the car checks out being a problem, and it turns out you're getting a bad run of bulbs. That could be what's happening there.
I mean, to me, like, the first thing I would think of is, okay, are these running off a relay? And usually they run off relays, right?
Nowadays, again, when you turn your light switch on, you made a request to a computer. The computer carries out your request and turns the said light on. So the circuitry has to be correct, and the computer has to be carrying out that function. Easy to test when you get out to the bulb with a standard old test light. That confirms whether the signal's really there or really not, and then you'll know whether you got a bad bulb or not.
All right, go ahead.
Finish. No, it's not simple anymore. It's not like that 65 Le Mans that I keep referring to.
Stop bringing that up. This is from Jesse in Albany. Jesse writes, got a question for today's show. I recently took my 2012 Volkswagen Beetle in for routine oil change and inspection. I was told my car failed inspection due to deteriorated front rotors. Struck me as strange because when I took the same car in for inspection last year, same company, different location, they told me the same thing, almost word for word. It looks like someone threw new pads on your old rotors, is what they said. Last year, it cost $200 to $300 to fix everything, so I'm hesitant to do it again without a second opinion. How long do front rotors usually last in the Northeast? Could I have really burned through them in a year?
Well, that's a really good question, and this is exactly what's happening. And we have seen this more in the last few months because there was so little driving happening. Vehicles were parked and not driven for days, weeks at a time. And those brake rotors or brake discs are raw steel. So they rust, and they'll rust overnight. They'll get a film of corrosion on them just from the humidity in the air. So if that rust gets too deep, the normal action of the brake pads rubbing that rust away doesn't clean them properly, and the rust takes over and wins. And I tell a lot of customers that we replace more brakes now than we ever did before because of severely rusted brake rotors.
Okay, now, before you go further with this, I just got a follow-up from this person via email. It says, I drive to work every day and have for the entire lockdown.
Well, that's interesting, because if the car is driven daily, it generally is not an issue, and it should not occur in that short a period of time. That takes us back to our last question of inferior parts or not quality that we are accustomed to. And the grade of the metals has declined, and those rotors get rustier way faster. So you can get better quality rotors. You can get them coated, not just painted, but coated. And if you buy for her car in particular, you can buy some German rotors still that are going to be twice the money, but they are much better quality.
Well, let's take a break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The lines are loading up. Still a couple of open lines, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls is our guest today, joining us via the telephone. And let's go to the telephone. And Bob in Clifton Park, you're first.
Hi. I bought a car last July, and then I had surgery in February. So I wasn't driving a car for about 4 or 5 weeks because of that. And then pretty much had to shelter in place with very little driving since then, except recently I've been going to physical therapy twice a week. I've had the oil changed, and tires rotated by the dealer. Is there any other special attention I ought to be giving the car? It hasn't even had 6,000 miles on it.
Yeah. So in other words, basically just in regard to the fact that it's been sitting around so much in the last almost year?
Right.
Yeah.
Usually, by this time I'd have twice as much mileage on it.
Yeah. We spoke about rusted brake rotors, which is extremely common, particularly right now. If a car can be driven almost daily, that usually is not much of an issue. And if it's parked in a garage rather than outside where the rain can splatter up on those brake discs. So frequent driving, keeping the brakes clean. You're driving it enough now to have some gasoline have been run through the tank. So you don't have, 9, 10, 12-month-old gas. Out here in the country, we see a lot of rodent activity on cars that sit a while. It wouldn't hurt to raise the hood and just see if it looks like there's been any activity on and around your engine with mice or rodents building little nests and clumping up stuff. I had a car which happened to belong to my mother quite a few years ago. I raised the hood one day to check the oil, and there was a big burn mark and debris from a small fire. The mice had built a nest on the exhaust manifold. She started the car and drove it.
Oh, no.
It caught on fire, and the flames got to the insulator on the hood and almost burned it through.
Wow.
And then the fire went out. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I mean, things were melted, the whole deal. So anyway, that's something to be checking on any car that sits any period of time. But I think you're fine. Filters, drive it regularly. And that's about all you need to do.
All right. Well, Bob, thanks a lot for the call. That's a good question, though. You say drive it regularly.
Yeah.
Those who are not going to work, what is regularly? Once a week?
Yeah, it's a good question. Pretty a relative term. It's ideal to drive your car every day, but it's not always practical. At least once or twice a week if you can.
Yeah.
And that just keeps everything limbered up. It keeps it exercised. We're seeing a lot of weak batteries because
yep.
people will only go to the grocery store and back or previously. Things are loosening up now. People are moving. I'm seeing 10 times more traffic
than we had
6 weeks ago when we did our first show over the telephone.
Yep.
So, that's it.
All right. Back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is with us today. Linda in Saratoga. Linda, you're up.
Thank you. Good morning, fellas.
Hi.
Good morning.
I want to buy a Volkswagen bus from the 70s, and the outside looks pretty good. The interior looks redoable. Am I talking huge money or just minimum? I don't know what it's going to cost to get the engine rebuilt.
Boy, are you talking to the right guy?
And
you should see the front window of his place.
Potentially it could be big money. Very, very, it's very hard to estimate what you might be faced with because, you're talking a maybe potentially a 50-year-old vehicle, right? What in the 70s?
Right. Yep. With the pop top.
Yeah.
I had one when my kids were little and we just had so much fun in that
cool.
and it was cheap to go places and so I'm doing the nostalgia thing.
Yeah,
I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Older
I don't blame
years
you.
Around in one.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a couple of them, a 78 and a 66. But I've done quite a bit of work to them. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I drove the 78 today to get my takeout lunch. But
aww.
it needs to really get completely looked over by a specialist that does these and has the facilities and the parts availability. But you could be in for a pretty major project. But they're a sought after vehicle.
Can you give that dollars?
Pardon me?
Yeah, they are. Can you dollar wise, what would I pay for it? And then what does it just a ballpark idea on how much I'd be putting into the frame and the engine and everything?
Well, that's a tough answer without seeing.
In my mind, I'm thinking $3,000 for the shell, for the whole Volkswagen bus, And then I'm thinking maybe $5,000 to do the engine and the brakes and the whatever you have to do.
Well, finding one that's reasonable is difficult unless you've already got one available. So the
mechanic?
Price...
No. An actual...
the vehicle.
Yeah, the vehicle itself.
Bus.
I've got one.
Say it again, Linda.
Before I make an offer.
You kind of dropped
Did
out
you hear
on
all
us.
That?
She dropped out. You said you got one and then we lost you.
Okay, there is one that I know of, and I'm not even sure if the people want to sell it, but somebody told me they thought they might want to sell it. So
yeah.
I'm thinking, you know.
This is my advice, and a lot of the car guys will tell you this. When you watch some of these build shows, some of these shows on Velocity and all those, and Motor Trend TV, buy the most complete and restored vehicle that you can afford rather than buying it raw and having to go through that painstaking and potentially virtually endless task of getting it back together. I would try to find one that's more turnkey. Spend more money and have less anguish and time trying to fix it.
Linda, good luck with that purchase. Thank you very much for calling. The one in your window at the shop is a 66, you said?
Yes. Yep, that's a 66.
And that you restored that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we didn't have to do a tremendous amount to that vehicle because I was lucky enough to get it from the original owner.
Oh.
In low mileage.
There you go.
But that's rare.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Cars Today, Charles and Fishkill. Charles.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a 2018 Subaru Outback with 29,000 miles on it that I bought new from the dealer. I've noticed this very unusual occurrence. I will turn the car off. It doesn't happen all the time. I've noticed it maybe three times in the last 2 years. I'll turn the car off. I'll get out. It's totally off. The key is out of the ignition, and there will be a kind of a whirring mechanical noise from behind the left rear wheel. It happened last night. The car had been parked for several hours. I went outside and heard this whirring sound. I put my hand behind the wheel to see if I could feel any vibrations or anything, but I couldn't. But it was this kind of an electrical whirring turbine kind of noise that starts up on its own and then stops on its own. Do you have any experience with that?
Well, I can tell you what happens to a lot of cars in reverse of the way you explained it. A lot of vehicles now, when you approach the vehicle and you unlock it or open the door, it energizes the fuel pump.
Oh.
And you'll hear the pump run fairly noticeable. And what that is there to do is to charge the fuel system with fuel and adequate pressure so you get a quicker start. Mm-hmm. I don't believe there's an after run that you could be hearing unless there's something going wrong with your system. Now, I don't know if Subaru precharges the fuel system. Volkswagens, Audis, I believe BMWs, a lot of European cars have that precharge feature, and it's very noticeable once you know what you're hearing. If I could hear your car, I could tell you, yeah, that's the fuel pump running. I don't know if Subaru has a feature that turns it on after you shut the engine off, but that would be my guess. That's what's there is a pump in the gas tank, and the tank's back there where you've described.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, if there's a leak if you're hearing a hissing sound, it could be from the emissions charcoal canister that's also back there. But I really, the way you described that sound very eloquently with the whirring turbine sound really makes me think of a fuel pump.
Okay. And having it kind of switch itself on after the car has been stopped for several hours, is that unusual? Or
yes, yeah. If it's happening with the car completely shut down hours later, that is not supposed to happen. And the fuel pump, like everything now, is commanded by a computer.
Right.
And if that module is going a little haywire, it certainly has the ability to turn that pump on or off at any time it cares to. So yeah. I think I may, you may want to contact the dealer. Maybe other people are having this issue and they'll recognize your story.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Charles. 800-348-2551 is our number. And the great Gordon Fricke is with us today. Let's jump over to Vermont. Maxine, hello, you're on.
I'm fine. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 1986 560 SL, and the air conditioning doesn't work.
Oh, boy.
It's not working right now, but it did.
Yeah.
And I want to know what's going to make it work.
Ah.
And where do I go? What place converts or takes care of it?
All right, hey, Maxine, before Gordon gets going on the answer, could you just turn your radio down a little bit?
I certainly can.
Zach, the engineer, is grimacing again.
Gone?
Better. Okay, now go ahead.
Okay, hi. Maxine, how are you?
I'm fine.
So here's the basic steps with air conditioning. It needs to be established that there's adequate charge in the system. That means the refrigerant is at the right level, and that turns the pressure switches to the right position to potentially make cold air. Then the compressor has to be engaged, and depending on the age of the car, yours in particular is a very complicated blend of electronics and vacuum controls. Mercedes-Benz was putting on electronic climate control systems in those years, but they were very, very clunky and rudimentary, and they used engine vacuum to do a lot of the switching and turning on. That's what gets mm-hmm. really complicated on a car like yours, and it really needs to go to a shop that is very experienced with that vintage Mercedes, just to cover all the bases, and then if it is a control issue, have the ability to diagnose it and change it if necessary. But that one's a tough one because of the climate control system in there. And I think that's what your car
do
has.
That?
Well,
what
I think it, yeah, I think dealerships probably would not, because they're inundated with the latest cars. To them, an old car is 5 years old. I would try to seek out a European shop that does Mercedes-Benz in particular and see if they've got any experience in those systems.
Is this about Freon gas?
Well, the refrigerant is refrigerant is definitely the component that it needs to have, and that's easy to establish whether the charge is adequate or not. Then the controls, now you got to start going into the controls and what turns it on and what drives the compressor and all that stuff, you know. So it's not easy, particularly on...
How much does that cost? What's the usual conversion on something like that?
Well, you're not really talking about a conversion. It's more so the diagnosis of the control system. And that's where there's no way to do an estimate until it gets to the hands of the specialist.
Well, what's the range for this sort of thing?
I couldn't guess. Ray, give her a range.
Somewhere between $12,000 and $15,000. No, Maxine, we really don't
know. That's about the cost of the car, so you're not really giving me an answer.
We don't really know.
And it's pretty hard to find this sort of very specialized place. And I want to know why it's really a big secret. Why is it a big secret to find a reputable place?
I like your line of questioning. I like your line of questioning, Maxine. What do you think, Gordon? Yeah, it's like 60 minutes. Gordon, answer the question. Answer the lady's question.
Well, it depends on where you live. You know,
Gordon, I live in Vermont.
if you're out in the country, there's not a lot of specialists because there's not that many of those cars around, particularly vintage, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of people
That big company in Bennington where everybody pulls up their beautiful little cars?
All right, we'll just leave it alone now.
I don't know the gas station.
Right.
And
Hemmings. That's Hemmings Motor News. Yeah, they don't do any repairs there. They just do the magazine
and have
a vintage gas station.
Well,
but everybody has a vintage car around here, both Mercedes
Maxine,
and...
You, you're right.
Yeah.
They might have a direction to send you.
Good idea.
Been there, done that.
Okay.
Now where?
Oh, boy.
Been there, done that. Why is it a big secret to try to get that car fixed? If they want, but there'll be people to run and buy my car, but there won't be people to say exactly how much and where to go.
Maxine, you and I... You got to come on and host this show with me because you and I are on the same page about so much stuff. We're going to let you go now, but thank you very much. Maybe one of these days we'll do this show together, and then Gordon Fricke will be in some serious hot water. What do you think, Gordon?
You got it.
I love that call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Thank you, Maxine. You made my entire day. Let's go now and go to Shane in Pine Bush. Shane, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, yeah. So here's my question. My question is kind of a two-parter.
Okay.
All right. I have a 2006 Ford Econoline E350 extended.
Okay.
It needs transmission basically. But I'm going to turn it into like an overland camper type of deal. And my mechanic says if I'm going to do that, well, I was eventually going to put four-wheel drive into it. So now he said if you're going to put in a transmission, now's the time to do the four-wheel drive conversion. I'm perplexed as to whether to go with some of these kits that I see online that's still going to require me buying additional parts. Or go with what he suggested finding a Ford Excursion of like from 2005 to 2007, like a salvaged one.
Right. Yep. I don't know if those are bolt-in pieces or not because of a possible wheelbase change. You know, the Econoline has a shorter nose than an F-Series vehicle.
Mm.
Now, maybe that won't affect anything. There is a company that does conversions on those exact vehicles, and I could, if you emailed me, I could give you their name, and I think I might have their phone number. They are a conversion company that does a lot of makes and models, but they do tons of Fords, and they did a lot of E350 four-wheel drive conversions for ambulance services, so you had a higher traction vehicle.
What is your email address, Gordon?
It's GordonF@BarberFricke.com.
Do you get that, Shane?
GordonF@BarberFricke.com.
You got it, man. Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. I tell you what, Gordon, I need a quick breather after Maxine's call. I'm still all wound.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Back with the home stretch in a moment. Vox Pop. It's Cars Today. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. A couple of emails here, Gordon, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one's from Mark. I don't remember ever flushing the power steering fluid on any of the cars that I used to have back in the old days. Now, however, when I take my car in for service, the service advisors are always recommending a power steering fluid flush. What are they doing this for? Is it just a gimmick?
Well, that's a touchy subject, and I'll give it to you two ways.
All right.
Yes, it is a good idea. It's generally not in any maintenance schedule, but it is on a higher mileage, older vehicle. It is nice to replenish that fluid because it does get some contamination from the components in the power steering system.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part to the answer is it's a major upsell item for a lot of your mass merchandisers. It's kind of an easy sell. We'd like to flush your power steering. It doesn't look like it's ever been done. It's only $69.95. And you know what I mean? It's not a big it's not like saying you need a $700 power steering flush because nobody would do it.
But right, but now is it possible that you could do more harm than good?
No, not on a power steering. It's not like old transmissions. That's a good thing you mentioned that because we get that question a lot. High mileage old automatics could be shocked to death by doing a fluid flush.
Yeah.
But generally, power steering is a different animal. It doesn't have all those components in there. So it's not a bad idea. We do them on some vehicles if they're really necessary. But you got to be careful of the upsell because you could go into that place, you know, every year and they tell you the same thing unless they had you in their system, you know.
Right. Okay. This is from Pam, and the subject heading is desperate in Hoosick. Just heard the answer about rodents under the hood. Have a 10-year-old CRV and first 7 years, no problems. But now we have this problem frequently in spite of driving the car every day. We live out in Hoosick, so we know there are critters. However, these rodents have cost us $2,000 in the last 3 years with new wiring harnesses. All my research shows car manufacturers are aware that the soy-based wiring is a problem, but don't do anything about it. Seems as though lots of people have the same problem. Jumping off on your advice about driving the vehicle often, can you suggest anything to reduce the chances of this happening again? And that is from Pam, desperate in Hoosick.
Yes. C-A-T.
Put what? Put a cat under the hood?
Yeah, get a cat under there.
Well, the cat's not going to live long under the hood, Jordan.
No, that is a big problem, and you're absolutely right. I think it's one of the Swedish car makers, which there aren't too many, but it might have been Volvo, that discovered that they were using, like the emailer mentioned, some type of a different product in the insulation on the wires, and maybe it was soy, that is attracting rodents, and they are doing massive damage.
Interesting.
I've tried everything on cars that I store to keep them out. I've tried mothballs. I've tried dryer sheets, the electronic, the one things you plug in, the electronic evaders that are supposed to, you know, give them a high frequency that they don't like. Sometimes they don't do a big deal, and other times they still get in there amidst all those things. So I don't know what the best answer is. But
well, you know, you and I have often talked about this. You know, some people say it's snake oil, but those ultrasonic, those little devices you plug in.
Yeah, yeah.
I swear they work, although science will tell you they don't work.
Yes, and I've had exterminators say don't work, but of course they probably wouldn't want them to work because that'd be some business lost, you know. But
make a point.
Yeah.
All right, this email, last one, and then we'll get back to the phones. This is from Joseph in the Pioneer Valley. He writes, "Hi, Ray and Gordon. The whirring noise from the right rear quarter of the late model Subarus is the fuel pump regulating the air pressure in the fuel tank. That's what my Subaru dealer told me when I brought it up about my 2013 Outback. When my 2017 Forester did the same thing, I wasn't surprised. It isn't something to worry about. I would worry if I were him and my Subaru dealer told me otherwise, because it would suggest that they aren't keeping up or they're hoping to exploit his worrying about it. Carry on. By the way, Fricky has VW buses. That puts him in two separate categories. One, he's cool. Two, he's slightly nuts."
True on both counts, Ray.
All right, back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number. Jim in Stone Ridge, you've been waiting a while. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, not long as some.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello. Hi, this is Jim in Stone Ridge.
Splendid. You're on.
Okay, I've got a 2001 Ford Escape, and it has a habit of locking the doors itself when no one's in the car. And this can be a terrific problem if it's in a parking garage and the keys are in the lock. Mm. Suggestions?
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. And I have experienced it firsthand on Ford products, among others.
Huh.
GMs are very famous for that. There are some glitches in the electronics that operate the power locks in the security system. The vehicle's probably too old for flash programming of the modules or the computers, because I don't think they were doing it then. But we have a policy or a rule that in the shop, no matter what the weather is, we always put a window down the minute we get in the building.
Yeah.
Because it'll happen to you unsuspectingly, and you'll be working on the car and the keys are locked in it.
Yep.
And once in a great while, we've failed to do that. And I've had to call the owner. Oh, by the way, do you have a spare key to your car?
Oh, boy.
The car locked up in the shop and the keys are in it, you know, and you know, it's no big deal. But if you don't have that spare key, you're in big trouble. So,
yeah.
My only suggestion on a vehicle of that vintage is maybe put a hide a key out there underneath the vehicle somewhere. So you can put it in the key, lock cylinder and unlock the car. That'd be the quickest and easiest solution to that.
Okay. Sounds like that's the straightforward advice, and it's a lot cheaper than the $150 I paid to get it started and broken into in a garage a few years ago.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. We appreciate it. Now, what do you think this is, an RF issue? In other words, maybe Jim is in a zone where there's a lot of radio transmissions going on. What is tripping the locks?
There's a possibility of that if his vehicle has remote locks, which it may or may not, you know. Mm-hmm. But yes, it is an RF signal that triggers them open and shut, and it's entirely possible. But right. We do see a lot of it. I've got an older Chevy truck that I use for plowing snow and stuff, and it will lock itself up quite regularly on me.
Oh, boy.
And I always have another key with me or outside or in the building somewhere.
Interesting. All right, let's go to Norm in Queensbury. Norm, you're on.
Hi. I got an 85 Ford E150 van. And the left directional signal works very slowly, but the right one works at the proper frequency. Would that be a flasher unit, or would that be just a bad bulb or a wire, maybe?
Well, yeah, both. But here's how those operate, especially on a vehicle of that age. The resistance in the bulbs is what determines the speed of the flasher. So the flasher is on, off, on, off, on, off, based on the heating of the bulbs inside this little flasher unit. If you've got an issue with one side of the vehicle, there's too much current draw somewhere or not enough, it'll change that frequency.
Yeah.
But before you go through all that anguish, replace the flasher unit, and that'll probably take care of it.
Okay.
Okay.
When's a good time to call you at your...
What, Norm?
When's a good time to call you at your workplace there so I can discuss how do I find a buyer for my MGA?
Well, that's a different story. Why don't you drop him an email and you can do it that way. Thanks, Norm, for that. 800-348-2551. Gerard in New Paltz. Hello, you're on.
Hey, Ray, Gordon. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm glad you switched from Joe and Schmo to Gordon Fricky. Gordon, you know your stuff. Here's my question.
Thank you.
89 Plymouth Acclaim, 75,000 miles. I want you to tell me if I followed the right process. Okay? Seems to be a fuel pump problem. Here's what I did. I disconnected the fuel line to the carburetor, and I didn't get any gas out of there. Secondly, I had someone go inside the car, turn the key on while I had my ear to the gas tank. I didn't hear anything. I was told or looked something up online. They say you should hear a hum. I've replaced the fuel relay, checked the fuse. The fuse was good. And so I've dropped the gas tank. And since I've got the gas tank down, there's a fuel pump, a sending unit, and a pressure relief rollover valve. Should I just go ahead and replace all three of those?
Well, on your car, is the fuel pump and the float assembly all one unit?
The
Are
fuel
still
pump
there?
Assembly.
Hello?
Yes.
I'm here. Yeah.
Is the fuel pump
the back
part
of the tank? The fuel pump is in the tank.
Right.
And the sending unit is also in the tank, separate from the fuel pump.
Okay.
The pressure relief valve is on top of the gas tank.
Got it. Yep. See, most cars newer than yours, everything's in one package. So in that case, you just change the whole shoot and match, and it's over.
Okay.
I don't know if you need to change that float assembly or not. If you've been having zero problems with your gas gauge, You really don't have to. And the rollover valve is a very simple thing, so I don't think I would need to change that either.
Okay, now
what I would do if I were you, since you've got the tank out and the wires to the pump disconnected, put a test light across the two wires that come out of the harness from the car that, that operate that fuel pump.
Okay.
And then have somebody crank the engine so it energizes the relay. Be sure that test light lights up.
Okay.
If it does not light up, you've got a problem getting current to the pump, and you very likely don't have a pump problem.
Okay. All right, rule that out first. Test light. Okay, on the fuel pump, the wire is going to that. A test light on that. Key on. Engine running.
It's not going to run, but you can have somebody crank it over. And you want to make sure that test light illuminates, indicating that the computer is turning the relay on and it's asking for the pump to operate.
Okay.
Okay, so the problem could be in the computer.
Well, it could be in something that's preventing current from reaching the fuel pump. So you may not have – the pump may not be necessarily faulty at this point. So you would like to rule that out.
Okay.
All right, Gerard, thank you very much. We now go to Caroga Lake. And Lynn, hello, Lynn.
Hi.
You're on.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Sure thing.
I can. I'm calling from the Adirondack, so I'm sorry if I don't have very good you can't hear me. Sometimes I cut out. But,
you sound great.
All right, great. I have a 2014 Honda Accord, and I bought it 2 years ago. It's had this problem for the entire 2 years. It's in the passenger front wheel. I go down a hill, and after I go down a hill, use the brakes, it has this whirring noise in there. Woo, 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 woo.
Oh,
and
I like that.
It's gotten louder and louder over the 2 years, but every time I take it into the station and complain about it, they say they don't hear anything. And I really I even took it to a different guy, and he said that I had really aggressive brake pads and that it was causing it.
Is it possible? Did any of these guys go with you on the test drive so you both were on the same page? Okay, that's what you need to do.
Because, see, I live up in the mountains. And so when I go down to get it serviced, it's down in the flats, you know, like in Johnstown or Broad Auburn. And they don't have really big hills like I do.
Yeah.
And after I get done at the bottom of these big hills, I've even had a girlfriend say to me, "What is wrong with your car? I mean, it gets it's really loud." And it goes away after a little while.
Yep. It sounds to me like it is definitely an issue that only occurs when the brakes are getting hot from going down your steep grades. And reproducing that would maybe require a lot of braking to make that sound come back. If your repair shops have removed the wheel or wheels to really inspect everything, and they didn't find anything wrong in there.
They never did. No.
Yeah, I mean, and that's for having it happen this long of a period of time. You know, that little bad spot of the brake pad should have worn away, unless it is a poorly mixed pad to begin with, which does happen because brake pads are a mixture of a bunch of materials. What I do in cases like this is I try to go together with the owner of the car. So what the owner is hearing and concerned with, we're both hearing it or feeling it at the same time. So we're on the right page with what the symptoms are. So I think I would do that. Try to get it to where you can reproduce the problem.
Okay.
And then
they don't have big hills near their shop like I have. So I never felt like it was something I could replicate, you know?
Right.
Um,
And it really has gone on so long, and I've complained so many times that, you know, I'm starting to look like the crazy lady that, you know, she's complaining about that again.
At some point, you're going to just plain old need new brakes up front. And when that day comes and the problem is over, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Lynn, we got to
go. It couldn't be anything like a wheel bearing or...
It doesn't sound to me like that's the case because you seem to find that it only occurs when you're after you've done a lot of braking. And it only the sound only occurs when your foot is on the brake pedal. Is that correct?
Yeah. No. Oh, no. That is not correct at all.
That is okay, so it happens without being on the brake.
Even after I go down the hill... And it'll continue for quite a while, miles and miles.
Hmm.
And it's like something stuck or something just whirring in there. And everybody's kind of shrugged their shoulders and gone. We don't know what it is.
Oh, boy.
I would try to find a way to reproduce that sound with the mechanic. You may have to find a place where you can keep going up and down a hill. Where you can get those brakes warm enough to where it makes the sound. Could be the rotors expanding and touching something, you know, due to some corrosion. But, stay with it, you know. But it doesn't sound to me like it's a safety issue. But you should definitely try to bring it to somebody's attention so it gets resolved.
All right, Lynn, thanks a lot. Now, we only have about 45 seconds, but Nick in Mechanicville has been waiting a while. Nick, can you do this real quickly?
Yes, I can. When I hit the gas on my car and put my foot to the floor, instead of accelerating quickly, it does nothing at all. The only way I can get my car to accelerate is by accelerating very gradually. I brought it to a mechanic. He cleaned some kind of fuel injector thing, said it. He didn't see what it was doing, but it's still doing it.
What kind of car is it?
It's a 2005 Hyundai Tucson.
So there could be an issue with your electronic throttle because your foot is not directly linked to the engine. A throttle service might be necessary unless that's what they already did. Other than scanning the car with Hyundai software, see if there's any weird codes in there that haven't turned on the check engine light. That's what it could be. It could be a throttle operation.
All right. Well, that is unfortunately where we will have to leave it. So thank you for that last call. Gordon Fricke, I'll tell you what, it's been great having you here. We could go for another couple of hours, but you probably have to get back to work, right?
Well, I just left putting a transmission mount in a Titan pickup truck, so it really didn't hurt my feelings getting away from it for a while.
Well, back to work you go. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Support comes from the Hyde Collection, temporarily closed to support our community, but providing online art activities for families guided by educators. HydeCollection.org and Facebook for details. At Paul Smith's College, helping winter sports athletes pursue their Olympic ambitions while completing a college degree. Paul Smith's College, it's about the experience. paulsmiths.edu. Once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the calls. You know, even Maxine, who got us a little riled up. All right, Maxine, maybe take next show off and then call us the show after that. Thanks to Zach, our engineer. Charlene Knight took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Astronomy with Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson. Right now, stay tuned for 51%.